Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as we head into the full work week here after the Thanksgiving break. We hope you had a wonderful holiday season and are ready for a whole lot more here in a few more weeks. A couple of stories that, Jim, you have been focusing on fit in our martinis today, both good and crazy. Let's start with the good. You've noticed that the Associated Press found that Hillary Clinton, while Secretary of State, met or spoke by phone with nearly 100 corporate executives and longtime Clinton associates, and they found no evidence of conflicts of interest in Hillary Clinton's meetings. But as you point out, it's not likely that her staff would write trade influence for donations in her appointment book. You say follow the money and the contacts. And what we could have here is the media once again focusing on what was a huge story at the beginning of the year.
Let's take our listeners back to the spring. A whole bunch of media institutions such as the New York Times, who conservatives have a well-grounded skepticism about, started asking some very tough questions and doing some really solid reporting on what appeared to be a pattern of decisions at the State Department that benefited Clinton Foundation donors and a lack of disclosure about foreign governments donating to the Clinton Foundation and kind of this rather glaring conflict of interest that, sure, you couldn't just write a check to Hillary Clinton and hope for the State Department to make the decision you wanted, but it was perfectly legal for the them to write a giant check to the Clinton Foundation, sorry, the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, and she would say, well, I don't control that money, so it's not really – it doesn't count as a bribe or anything like that. And there were lots of good examples of this. You know, the State Department authorizing arms deals to countries that had donated to the Clinton Foundation. The odd decision to allow Russia to purchase 20% of the U.S. uranium supply. The State Department giving some very prestigious rewards to Clinton Foundation donors. The salute of Nigeria's human rights record when Bill Clinton is going to there and getting $700,000 for speaking fees. This is just what I did in a bit of, quick Googling and what I remembered of this. I'm sure if you go back further, you can find more examples of this. Perhaps the greatest and most glaring example of this is Huma Abedin being allowed to work for Hillary Clinton, collect taxpayer paycheck, work for the Clinton Foundation at the same time, and then work for a consulting firm, Teneo, which, oh, by the way, was founded by Doug Band, formerly the Clinton Foundation. this is a giant glaring conflict of interest, and the AP just can't seem to find anything. But the reason this is a good martini is that, look, this all happened in the spring. And remember when Hillary Clinton was just not doing any interviews?
Yes.
She just was completely inaccessible. There was no chance. Well, now somebody can ask her about her. Now she's doing a lot more press. You can't hide from the press when you're running for president, as she is. She is a declared candidate. These are not premature questions. You know what this is all going to build up to, of course, Greg, right?
What?
I'm tired of hearing about the favors for donations. Bernie Sanders will insist he's tired of hearing about it, and the press will say the issue is going to bed. No. But hopefully you'll get some serious questions about this, and she'll be able to say, no controlling legal authority. At this point, what difference does it make? We'll get some other classic Hillary Clinton excuse from this.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And we head over to Paris, where for the next 2 weeks, people from different governments around the world, scores and scores of governments, as it turns out, will have to listen to people like John Kerry drone on and on and on and on about how we need to strike this landmark climate change deal to save our planet. And the president speaking for about 13 minutes today and hitting a couple of notes that just make you want to slam your palm against your forehead. First of all, he credited the resolve of the people of Paris in the wake of the terrorist attacks there a couple of weeks ago, but he thinks the conference itself is the greatest slap in the face to ISIS. Here's what he said.
And we salute the people of Paris for insisting this crucial conference go on. An act of defiance that proves nothing will deter us from building the future we want for our children. What greater rejection of those who would tear down our world than marshaling our best efforts to save it?
So there's the president's take, Jim, that ISIS must be really quaking in the boots over the fact there's a climate change conference happening in Paris now. But the message seems conflicted because Bernie Sanders thinks if you solve the climate change issue, terrorism will go away. So are we rebuking them or are we saving them?
You know, it's like the chicken and the egg. Right. When they say, this summit is a slap in the face of ISIS, can we do more to their face than just slap it? Right. Ooh, we give them a sick burn. We really showed them. Yeah. extraordinarily frustrating. I think it was Leon Wolf over at Red State had made this kind of interesting point that, look, Obama kind of realizes that to do anything serious about ISIS for the remaining year he has in office would require him to do things he doesn't want to do. He would have to commit a lot of troops to it. He would have to have a fight, but there would be civilian casualties. There's been a report that we were not bombing the trucks out in the desert because we weren't sure if the drivers really were. They're just ISIS employees, Greg. They're not really members of ISIS. I guess if you don't have a membership card, we can't kill you. I mean, I kind of like to put out the message that you don't want to work for ISIS because you might get bombed by the Americans. You know, I'd like to make the ISIS HR department have a really hard time hiring people. But apparently that's too dangerous, crazy talk in the Obama administration. We're not bombing the oil facilities because we're worried about environmental damage. You know, like all kinds of reasons. We you know, when you fight a war, you have to do bad things. And sometimes there are bad consequences of that. And you have to accept that as the price of winning the war. And Obama's not willing to accept that price. So what's he going to do at the time in office? Well, he's going to take on he's not going to worry about ISIS that much. We're going to take on global warming. We're going to take on climate change because it's very hard to measure. And it's, you know, even though like 3% of Americans say this is their top priority, this is something you can do that is not necessarily disruptive and won't hurt his numbers and won't cause him to do things he doesn't want to do. Now, Greg, you know, I think the absolute best sign they're finally taking the crisis of climate change seriously in Paris. Yes. You know what has me cheery? Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe is in attendance. And let me tell you, Greg, nobody knows how to stop people from emitting carbon emissions. The way Robert Mugabe does. I mean, let me tell you, once he gets a mass killing, boy, those people just stop those carbon emissions right there.
Takes a team effort, Jim. What can I tell you?
There you go. Yeah. Hey, you know, here's the thing. Glenn Reynolds used to like to say, I'll believe it's a crisis when the people start acting like it's a crisis. I suppose if you're inviting the mass murderer to the table, then yes, you are treating it like a crisis. I give him a little bit of credit for taking it seriously. We may not like their solutions, you know, but... They're not soft pedaling it anymore, and of course they all took private jets to get there.
Yes, of course. And just in case you needed a little arrogance in your Monday morning lunch hour, here is the president talking about what he thinks can be accomplished at this summit.
The growing threat of climate change could define the contours of this century more dramatically than any other. And what should give us hope that this is a turning point? That this is the moment we finally determined we would save our planet, is the fact that our nations share a sense of urgency about this challenge and a growing realization that it is within our power to do something about it.
Lofty promises, I guess, Jim, from the guy who couldn't set up healthcare.gov and several other initiatives over the past few years, but just an amazing start to the climate conference in Paris today. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And during the holiday break, we had another tragic shooting, this one at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado. 3 are dead, 9 are wounded. The shooter is in custody. He appears to be a loner, big surprise, who didn't associate with a lot of people. And of course, as the narrative builds and the facts are known, more and more people are saying, well, given all the criticism of Planned Parenthood, this was bound to happen. Jim, you wrote about this in The Corner today, talking about how there's a huge double standard based on which way the facts of a specific shooting tend to break right or left, and there doesn't seem to be any consistency whatsoever. But even more important, you're very much fighting back against the notion that we all have to tone things down or else people might be tempted to go out and kill people.
I've often said whenever we hear the, oh, it's time to stop, you know, we need to stop this incendiary rhetoric. I could live happily in an America where people were more polite to each other, where political debates were more respectful of the opposing side, where people did not call each other's names, and it were more high-minded. Think William F. Buckley's firing line, okay? You know, like something like that. Or I could live happily in a country where there's a First Amendment and all speech is protected and anybody can say whatever they want. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. All right? We could do that. But what I cannot abide is this, you know, very conditional situation. Over the corner today in the Morning Jolt, I went through all the recent examples, going through the Colorado shooter, the Roanoke shooter, the Tucson shooter. And what basically the lesson is that time and time again, we're told if there's anything connecting the person, even tangentially to the right wing. And in the case of the Tucson shooter, this guy was a paranoid schizophrenic, heard voices, believed that grammar was part of a vast government conspiracy.
We were told, you know, that he was driven by Sarah Palin's map, and that, this was why, you know, the right wing was to blame for this. The shooter at the Family Research Council, he's not considered, there's no broader national discussion we need. There's no incendiary rhetoric, nothing to be taken from that. And it's very one-sided in these discussions, and I think it's rather ridiculous, this idea that, well, my political rhetoric is fine, but the other side's political rhetoric sets off time bombs. And I actually very much reject this notion that any of us are responsible for the actions of mass shooters. Mass shooters are responsible for the actions of mass shooters. And I really believe it's going to be this creepy, subtle censorship that you can't say what you want to say because you might set off some nut job. Look, the whole point of it is, you know, you don't know what's going to set off a nut job because they're a nut job, right? You're applying logic to something that is inherently illogical. So that was my rant for the morning. A lot of people seem to be responding to it. I don't think this is going to change anything. I think there are too many people who are emotionally invested in the idea that the other side is just evil in its heart and that any rhetoric that they don't like is simply driving people to commit evil acts. And look, we believe in, you know, that a lot of people in this world believe in free speech for me, but not for thee.
No, very well put. And you're right. It's probably not going to change much because we've seen the narrative, certainly in terms of guns, and I'm sure we'll see a Planned Parenthood funding narrative coming out here as well in the coming days as more details become known. Jim, good to be back with you, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.